Our show's name pays tribute to the Boer Trekkers of South Africa, who in 1838 soundly defeated 30,000 Zulus on the bank of the Nkomo River, thereafter called Blood River, from the water turning red with the blood of the slain. Miraculously, no Boer Trekker died and only three were wounded. Now, your friend, Eddie Miller, will be your ambassador for tonight's show.
Hey, Blood River Radio family. It's been one heck of a ride. Just in case you're tuning in, the first hour, our system crashed. We couldn't get it. I'm eating chocolate right now, shouldn't I? I needed to break. This has been a stressful 2 hours. I've been eating some chocolate, man. I ran out of coffee. But anyway, the first hour, our system kind of crashed where we could not call out our guests to our guests, and our guests could not call in. The system, Jay and Lizzie, thank God, they got us back up sometime early in the second hour. And the first hour, unfortunately, we had to let Paul Fromm and Les, in our guest, Les Borey. We had to let them go. We couldn't get back with them. So we got the second hour. We got Robert Mazur on, and he was really understanding. He was great. If you missed that interview with him and you're just out tuning in, you need to go back and listen to the archives. The guy is incredible. I mean, you talk about a badass. I was just telling Lizzie, he's kind of like a nerd with a Thompson submachine gun in a sack full of grenades. I mean, I couldn't imagine having the guts that guy had to infiltrate the Medellin. I cannot pronounce it. I'll just call it Medellin, a drug gang, the Cali cartel, drug cartel. To infiltrate them, he didn't cover the part where he came close to death within about 3 minutes. Anyway, we've gone over to the third hour, transition to the third hour. If we're supposed to have them now, we have, we're getting Jacob Goodwin on. I guess I should have called and reminded them. We're having to hunt them down right now. It's been one of those nights. And we have Tamara Goodwin, who the mother of Jacob Goodwin. She's supposed to be in, helping me with Jacob. And Jacob, a quick little history of him. He was at the Battle of Charlottesville back August the 12th, 2017. And he since then, since being there, he was arrested by agents, I guess, out of the state of Virginia. I don't think there would be feds. And he was transported back to the state of Virginia, where he was given a quickie kangaroo trial, and thrown into prison. He did 7 years in a penitentiary up there, Virginia prison, for basically hitting a feral black in the nose. That's kind of maybe an oversimplification, but here's what happened there. I'll tell you about this till we find him. We get him located on the phone. At the Battle of Charlottesville, yours truly was there, along with some of my other brothers. Gene Andrews was there. I rode up there with Gene and Rich and Matt and Simon Roach. Well, it got really violent, and I know you people have heard us talk about that 100 times. Well, in Jacob's case, he was up there with another kid by the name of Daniel Borden. Daniel was only 18 when he got arrested, but I think we've got Jacob on the air right now. Are you okay, Jake? You there, Jacob?
Yes, sir, I am.
Oh, great. I should have given y'all the old courtesy call. I guess I'm sorry for slacking off and not calling to remind y'all. But anyway, we have you and your mother on, and I was just telling the people about you. Instead of me telling what happened, I'll finish what I was saying, and then you, and afterwards, I get through speaking, you can correct any mistakes I made. Well, Jacob Goodwin, I know another fellow up there we talked about was Daniel Borden and some other people. We had a lady on here years ago when I first started this program. We wouldn't took that long after Charlottesville. We had a lady on. I think her name was Nellie, and she talked about how Jacob Goodwin, people like Jacob and people like Daniel Borden, saved her life because there was some thugs beating the hell out of her. She said they were actually using nunchucks and stuff. Anyway, Jacob, I think, was involved in that, And also, he was involved. There was a hell of a fight in front of the notorious parking garage where we all went, everybody from League of the South and everybody and his mama that was going from the alt-right to go to the Unite the Right conference, get-together in Charlottesville, Virginia. They had a hell of a fight there. It's the famous fight. And Jacob was involved in all that fighting. And Jacob, you take it up from there. I'm going to let you finish that up. To introduce yourself briefly, Jacob. Tell them where you've been for the past 7 years, why you're there, anything you'd like to say. But go ahead and tell the Blood River Radio audience who you are, Jacob.
Oh, well, you know, Eddie, I think that kind of puts it all in perspective, man. I've been in the Virginia State Penitentiary for the last 7 years. I don't know if you follow my case, but, you know, I went to a kangaroo court and was sent to the penitentiary, and I've been out since October, and just kind of trying to figure out which way is up.
Just take a second. There's a lot of extraneous noise there. Are you grubbing across your phone, or is there some kind of you're not getting out very clearly. Is there something else going on there?
Is that any better?
That's better.
It might be okay, that's probably what it was. I apologize for that.
That's quite all right. You continue. I'm apologizing to you. So you were in the Virginia State Penitentiary for 7 years. Continue on and tell them why, how you got there, why you were there, et cetera, et cetera. In your own words.
Well, in my own words, I mean, the state government, the city is corrupt, and it was a city run by liberals, and it was corrupt. And, down to the every official, every citizen, there was no such thing as justice, and there was no such thing as truth in that court. They kangaroo courted me, and, you know, honestly, I felt helpless the entire process, and I was sent to prison. And then, you know, I basically sat in prison, and I recently, about 5 months ago, I just finished my last remedy in the courts. I fought it for 7 years, and honestly, I was just exhausted, you know, with the whole process. I was exhausted the whole process. I was ready for it to be over. You know, I have no faith in the court. I've never had faith in the court. And this whole situation has shown me and everyone else who I hope was paying attention that when it comes to us going to court, you know, you're not going to get freedom. You know, it's not, they got us hiding in the walls, you know, with the Gestapo looking for us.
You know, we have a well-known attorney. He's just come on, had been on our program a while, by the name of Sam Dixon. He's a well-known attorney. He lives in Atlanta, Georgia. And he said that if in any way possible, he said, you never, if you're white, like we are, you never, ever want to go to court. He said, "It's a lot of people have this false vision. They get their day in court if they have the facts and evidence in their favor. If they're true, the facts of the case are true and they are innocent, they think they will be okay." But he said, that is a fairy tale. What will happen to most of those people, the same thing happened to you. Now, let me ask you this. You were a young man. Now, when you going back to 2007, August of 2017, Jacob, how old were you then, son?
I was 22, about to turn 23.
And what made you want, this is a rhetorical question, what made you want to go to Charlottesville, Virginia?
Well, I had been involved in various white identitarian, you know, groups, and I was very invested in white identitarian politics, obviously. I had heard through all the different podcasts and things that I had listened to, I was following the whole Wes Bellamy and Jason Kessler incident with him applying for a permit and applying for our constitutional right to assemble, and the city outright saying, no, we don't care about your rights. We don't care about what you have to say. you know, just deal with it. And so, you know, then I saw all the things that Wes Bellman was saying. I saw all the things that, you know, Jason Kessler was pushing, all the different groups, like the alt-right groups, the nationalist front groups. They were all, you know, converging. It was becoming a bigger and bigger event, and I was following it. And then I saw them, they got the permit reinstated. So, and you know, if it wasn't a legal protest, you know, I think maybe the
Jason, hold up, thought we have to go to our first break. We have to go to our first break, Jacob. Don't lose your place. We got to take our first commercial breaks in the third hour. Be right back, folks.
Introducing PrepStartsNow.com, your ultimate guide to readiness and peace of mind. We offer practical preparedness tools, training, and education to take your family's household readiness to the next level. Browse the prep shop for essential products, check out our planning guides, and stay informed with our prep blog. Visit PrepStartsNow.com and subscribe to our emails for exclusive offers, new products, and future events. Remember, preparedness begins with PrepStartsNow.com.
Hey, this is Matt from Blood River Radio. Blood River Radio is your voice to save our land, our people, and our future. We propose Christian solutions to an anti-Christian assault on our bloodlines. We love what we do, but we cannot do it without your help. The annual operating cost of Blood River Radio is more than even a team of people should bear alone. With your donation, we can take the fight to our enemies and hold our own people accountable for their treachery against us. Please go to our website, www.bloodriverradio.com, and find a way to help us that is suitable for you. We are thankful for any cash, check, or money orders we get. We also appreciate your correspondence or letters of encouragement. Once again, please help, and thank you for joining the fight.
Former Sheriff Richard Mack recounts in his book, The Proper Role of Law Enforcement, how he came to realize while working as a beat cop how wrong the all-too-common orientation of police officers is when they think of their job as being to write tickets and arrest people. Richard Mack tells of his personal transformation from by-the-number cop to constitution-conscious defender of citizen safety and freedoms. Learn what it really means to serve and protect. Purchase your copy at CSPOA.org. That's CSPOA.org.
Dear Blood River Radio family, thank you so much for holding on. I'm so proud we were able to go out again. We've had our share of difficulties tonight, the last one being nobody's fault. But anyway, with all that talk aside, we've got our guest on now. And just in case you're just tuned in, which you're probably been here a while, we have Jacob Goodwin on, and he was out of prison, I think they said about 5 months ago. He was a victim of being wrongly incarcerated in a kangaroo court because of his part in the Battle of Charlottesville. Okay, before we went on break, I was asking him what made a 22, soon to be 23-year-old, just a kid, want to risk it all, chuck it all, and go to a city that's probably 900 miles away from where he was. He lives over in Arkansas. And so you tack on that much more distance between going. It was a long drive from Memphis there. But anyway, I'll go back where we were. Jacob, what made a young kid like yourself, a very young adult, want to go to great expense, the time, the effort, and take a chance? Because we all knew it was going to be tough, but we didn't know it was going to be that hard. But what made you do that, Jacob?
So, you know, as I was saying, I saw that the protest was picking up steam, and there were a couple of issues there. I was active in, white nationalist politics before that. I saw that, you know, Wes Bellamy declared that city the heart of Antifa, declared the capital of, you know, communism in America, whatever you want to call it, you know, But and I saw that they were saying, you know, we're going to deface this statue and destroy it, and we're also going to deny your rights as Americans, and especially as white Americans, to assemble and to protest it. And so I went down there. I consciously am a supporter of the Southern, you know, history, but I believe in supporting all white history. I understood that it wasn't, they will deface Northern history just as fast as they would deface white Southern history. The fact of the matter is, it's just a disguise because they want to deface white history. And I was very conscious of that. So it wasn't a sort of like Southern rights activist or like a Sons of Confederate Veterans or whatever those groups are. I really was conscious of the fact that it was white history under attack. And that's why I went down there. And when I saw that they were blatantly trying to just deny our rights, it became a free speech issue. It became a white identity issue. It became a freedom to assemble issue. You know, it was that our constitutional rights are being challenged by these people. And usually it's the government that does it. And these people were just, you know, average citizens who thought they had the right to do that. And, so I understood how big it was, and I listened to different podcasts. Everywhere I went, I heard about more and more and more people showing up, and so I could not look myself in the mirror if I didn't go and support other white nationalists that were going to answer the same call. There's no way that I could call myself a white nationalist after that if I didn't attend.
You know, Jacob, you may. A very salient point. A lot of people have been mistakenly believed, and you pointed out, it was strictly an attack on Southern culture. It, you know what? In the way they did it, Jacob, it looked like it's exactly what was going on. Because at the time, to the best of my knowledge, the vast majority of the Southern culture was what was being attacked. For instance, we had a wonderful, one of the finest statues in the world of a Confederate general, General Nathan Bedford Forrest, right here in Memphis, within 10 miles as the crow flies from where I live. He was buried there. His wife was buried there. And I think his son, he had a grandson who flew bombers in World War II. He was buried there. Well, the same old suspects circumvented the law, broke the law, with the full cooperation of the governor of the state of Tennessee, and they were forced to have to move that statue. They took the name of the park, Nathan Bedford Forrest State Park, and turned it into a medical science park, et cetera, et cetera. But the point you made now, dear friends, it's speeded up. There's attacking. You mentioned Lincoln, whom I can't stand. He was a demon, but he was white. They're attacking Thomas Jefferson, George Washington, all these sainted white people, we used to call them our forefathers, they're being attacked. They don't even have to be honorable. Any white person, and that's the point. I hope our Southern people, our Southern nationalists will listen to that. It's white people, and I'm going to shut up after I say this. That's what I've been saying all along. People have heard me say on this radio show, Jacob and Tamara, that Southern is a state of mind. It's in my case, I'm a hardcore Christian, came to Christianity real late in life. It doesn't matter if you are. I'm a white man. And the white people in this world are the only race being attacked all out like that. And with that, I'd like to congratulate you, Jacob, for pointing out the fact it's not just the Southern people being attacked, it's white people. But continue on, Jacob. I hope I didn't take up too much of your time.
No, absolutely not. You know, and that's that I agree with everything you said. And you're right. They have all these different tactics they use to justify why they're openly attacking us. And you know, it's when you see the narratives long enough and they repeat themselves, you begin to see, okay, well, it's not just Southerners that you're attacking. And our history, like you said, on a global scale is being attacked. And I came to this conclusion at a young age. I came across some content, and I kind of always just had a sensitivity to, you know, the folk soul, like the spirit of ethnicity. When I was around other ethnicities, which I was raised around them, I could always I was friends with them, but I could always feel a different spirit almost. Just the way they did things, the way they saw things. And you know, when I relocated to a predominantly ethnic European area, I saw a culture shift. And I felt so, like, at home with their spirit. But what I noticed was when I moved out of those areas, all of the ethnic Europeans, a lot of them tried to mimic non-ethnic Europeans. And I'll give you an example of this. So I moved to a small town, and you have, like, all these, you know, country high schoolers listening to rap and acting like they're, you know, living down in Little Rock. And it's just, it was bizarre to me because I'm like, well, we just left that area and you wouldn't fit in down there, but you're not like them. You don't have to have metal detectors in your schools. You guys are walking around the school with a dip in your mouth and a pocket knife. Well, you would get expelled for that if you were doing that in the inner city schools because they have so much gang violence. So it was interesting. It's like they were not conscious of how good they had it, and they wanted to mimic other cultures, which is very bizarre to me. And so at a young age, I got racially awakened very young, and I even in high school, I tried to awaken them. And a lot of times people were just like, what a weirdo. You know, I recently came in contact with one of my high school friends, and I asked him, I said, you know, because he was saying some things like I was saying. I said, well, I used to say these things to you on the bus. I used to say these things to you, and you guys thought I was a weirdo. And I was like, yeah, you know, I was the crazy kid. And he said, well, we all thought you were just trying to get a rise out of us. We didn't think you were serious. And I looked him in his eyes and I said, do you think I'm serious now? And he said, yes.
Yes. You know, and why is it not, I guess it does matter. Why is it, Jacob, that I've, just like you said, you see white kids. And by the way, this rap music, I don't know if it's still that way, but I've been told that the vast majority of the money, most of the money spent on rap music is by well-off white kids. It's not by blacks. And you see it every day. You see it. And some of them are starting to wear their pants real low. You know how these blacks do. Mm-hmm. They try to mimic. Do you think it's because of, I have my own opinions, of the media that's controlled by the same old suspects? The education system has been infiltrated. What is the biggest cause, in your opinion, why so many white people? Is it guilt? Is it a guilt complex? Is it an inferiority complex? Because, you know, for instance, the Super Bowl tomorrow, it's going to be like, you know, even the whitest team. This is not a rabbit trail, believe it or not. We have a guy by the name of Don Wassel comes on. He has this thing called Cast Football, and he's proven how that the football, especially college and pros, has been used to elevate Negroes up into periods of fame and money where they can breed with white women.
You did explore where it was.
There you go. So what's your take on that, Jason?
Are you saying the not the football, but the culture, the white culture emulating black culture amongst the youth, right? That's the question.
In general, why are so many white people white young people, especially high schoolers.
Well,
why are they
very,
trying to?
Very complex question. I think there's multiple factors that factor in to answer that question. I think it's actually very dynamic. There's a lot of dynamic factors, right? But one of the ones that I can see would be the reason that whites emulate that is the culture, Hollywood, the media, those things, they gratify that sort of behavior as funny, outgoing, abrasive, masculine, and, you know, like, is that a commercial?
Yes, sir. I'm glad you heard that. I was getting ready to say, we've got to go to a commercial break. This will be a long break, Jason. This will be a five-minute break. So if you got to go use the restroom and get yourself a drink, go ahead. You got about 5 minutes.
Exposing corruption, informing citizens, pursuing liberty. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
News this hour from townhall.com. I'm Jason Walker. Federal judge blocking temporarily Elon Musk from accessing sensitive Treasury Department records. Here's correspondent Donna Warder.
19 Democratic attorneys general had sued President Donald Trump in federal court in New York City, alleging the Trump administration allowed Musk's team access to the Treasury Department's central payment system in violation of federal law. The payment system handles tax refunds, Social Security benefits, veterans benefits, and much more. Engelmeyer, who was appointed by President Barack Obama, also says anyone prohibited from having access to the sensitive information since January 20th must immediately destroy all copies of material downloaded from Treasury Department systems. I'm Donna Warder.
Also at townhall.com, President Trump saying he is firing members of the Board of Trustees for the Kennedy Center and naming himself chairman.
The president also indicated that he will use the post to dictate programming at one of the nation's premier cultural institutions. Trump wrote on social media Friday, quote, that in my direction, we are going to make the Kennedy Center in Washington, D.C. great again. He says the current chairman, philanthropist David Rubenstein, is among those who, quote, do not share our vision for a golden age in arts and culture. He says, quote, we will soon announce a new board with an amazing chairman, Donald J. Trump. Bernie Bennett in Washington.
Speaker of the House Mike Johnson says enemies around the world are targeting Israel.
They're having to ward off Hezbollah in the north. They're having to respond to Houthi attacks in Tel Aviv. And they fended off a historic watershed direct attack from Iran itself, a regime that is allied with Russia and China.
Hamas releasing three frail-looking Israeli hostages earlier today. At the same time, Israel gave freedom to 183 Palestinian prisoners. More on these stories at townhall.com.
Let me talk about Relief Factor and how so many people enjoy a better, more pain-free life because of it. If you're dealing with everyday pain, it makes sense you'd want to try it first. Well, Relief Factor makes that pretty pain-free, too, with their three-week quick start kit for only $19.95. An easy, affordable way to see how it could literally change your life, like it has mine. Relief Factor is a daily supplement that fights pain naturally. Developed by doctors, Relief Factor doesn't just mask pain temporarily. It helps reduce or eliminate pain. In fact, the longer you take it, the more effective it is. Trying it couldn't be easier with their three-week quick start for only $19.95, less than a dollar a day. And it just takes a phone call to 1-800-4-RELIEF. That's 1-800-4-RELIEF. 1-800-4-RELIEF. Wherever you're having pain, every day you feel better is a day you live better. Try Relief Factor's three-week quick start. Visit ReliefFactor.com. That's ReliefFactor.com. Or call 1-800-4-RELIEF. 800-4-RELIEF for Relief Factor.
Okay, listen up, people. I'm beating the bushes for a few good men. I don't want you boys the alt-right. I want the hardcore of the hard right. And I need you front and center, boots on the ground, at a minute's notice, in the streets, and I need your money. You know the problem that the whites of the world face. It's the all-too-real threat of global extermination. And you know what's going on in South Africa and Western Europe. And unless you're semi-comatose, you've already seen the first stages of white genocide unfolding in our country. Our culture is under constant full-scale attack by our enemy. The enemy never sleeps. They spend day and night wrecking the monuments and the graves of our beloved kin. They attack us physically everywhere we go. They've already taken the linen and our stone. Now they're coming after our flesh. And if you're not too squeamish, if you want to be part of the number one white advocacy group and the number one white civil defense group in the United States, then contact Eddie Bombardier Miller at BloodRiverRadio.com. And please, please donate. And God knows you need us as much as we need you. Thank you.
Do you know what is great about America? Ask an Immigrant. Ask an Immigrant is a new podcast dedicated to helping Americans, especially our youth, value, appreciate, and be grateful for the freedoms we have here in America. Join host Lydia Wallace Nuttall as she interviews immigrants from around the world to discover their inspiring personal stories about why they came to America. To learn more about why America is the most prosperous, greatest country in the world, download the Loving Liberty app or go to lovingliberty.net.
In the medical field, IT security is crucial. Our highly skilled consultants are HIPAA certified and have 20 plus years of experience servicing medical clinics, billing and supply companies. We offer comprehensive endpoint protection, guarding your computers and servers against all stages of threats. And with our 24/7 monitoring services, you'll never worry about extensive downtime again. Ready to level up your IT support? Call 801-706-6980 today and discover how great IT services can be with Managed IT Services.
being this is a 44 Magnum, the most powerful handgun in the world, and would blow your head clean off, you've got to ask yourself one question. Do I feel lucky? Well, do you, punk?
Dear Blood River Radio family, just in case, I'll refresh your memory. If your memory might be, hopefully it's not as bad as mine. But we have Jacob Goodwin on. His mother, Tamara, is off. We'll bring her on before the show's over because she helped us get Jacob on today. And she's just a mother. But anyway, Jacob, you go ahead and finish the question. I think we're talking about why white, especially white young people, seem so desperate to emulate blacks. It's like they're ashamed of being black. I mean, ashamed of being white. But go ahead and finish that up before we go transition a little bit back to Charlottesville. Go ahead, Jacob.
Okay, well, to answer the question, where I was moving towards was, you know, like I said, it's very dynamic. It's a very hard question. There's multiple factors that factor in. But it's that, you know, whites, our culture is so attacked and so diminished, and we're told that we don't have a culture, and that, you know, if a white man and a white woman get together, that it's a vanilla relationship. There's nothing interesting about it. There's nothing salacious about it, you know. But, you know, when you have an exotic partner, you become more – it's an accessory, you know. You become more of a talking piece. You get more attention when you go out. And one thing that I've noticed, too, if you go out, you see that a lot of people have – and the more I've learned in my time, especially being incarcerated – the less intelligent individual, the less that he can perceive the difference between good and bad attention. And so what I mean by that is, say I was to go into a restaurant and I was dressed very sharp. When I walk in, everyone says, wow, he's well kept. He looks sharp. Well, I'm like, oh, look, everyone's looking at me. That's awesome. You know, I feel great. And if I go in there and I'm dirty and I have, you know, I have my hair shaved off in all different parts, and I look crazy, and I'm dirty, and everyone's looking at me. I know that I'm dirty, and I feel ashamed. Well, an unintelligent person will walk in there, and he'll be loud, obnoxious, and will dress obnoxious. And when people look at him, he thinks he's getting attention, and he likes it, but he can't understand that's negative attention. And when you're around more unintelligent individuals, especially other cultures, the way like Latinos – dress their vehicles, I've seen the way Latinos dress, especially the way African Americans dress. It's a very flamboyant style. Their hair styles are very abrasive to us, especially me. I think they're hideous. They're not the same as my culture. And where I'm going with this is, in an ethno state, the nature of the ethnic European, which is not as abrasive as primitive cultures, we are more fair. We are more reasonable. We are less abrasive in our physical features, from our body hair to the contours of our face to our language and our reasoning. But we've allowed other cultures that are very abrasive and primitive to come amongst us. And we, while that has taken place, the media has pushed a agenda upon our brothers and our sisters. Upon our brothers, it's defeminated them to the point to where they have no self-respect, they have no self-esteem, and they're letting these other cultures walk all over them. And then, so there are the other ones that see that, and I've even seen this in prison. They come to prison, and instead of them joining a white gang, that you can tell they're lost, so they go and they join a black gang. And they're stabbing people and running on all these missions and doing all these things for black gangs as a place, you know, to fit in. And these, you know, 40-year-old black men who were shot callers to these gangs are being like second fathers to these men. And I'm thinking, how could you be in that situation? And so then we have, you know, think of how many billions of dollars are wasted on social engineering and, you know, subliminal imaging towards our women. They gratify that sort of behavior in the males as well. You know, if that's why, you know, most Marxism is aimed towards the white woman. And historically speaking, from evolutionary psychology, they are more liberal because they were not facing other
tribes. They were not facing, you know, other cultures in war. They were back in the tent, stirring a pot, cooking and cleaning, and excelling at empathy, giving empathy to the old and the young. For the men, we were fighters. We fought other cultures. So in the modern world, of course, they're more liberal. They're more democratic because, well, that's their disposition based off of their evolutionary psychology. And what the Marxists have done is played on that. And so for the males to get mates, they have to emulate the cultures that are in, that are sexy to them, that are masculine and abrasive, right? So basically, they have a stranglehold on our women through, you know, or they have a stranglehold on men through our women, from what I see. And so, you know, a lot of men do things and dress certain ways, I think, is to, just to look cool to women and to sound, you know, tough. It's really interesting being amongst young whites. That's why that is. I mean, even the music, you'll be around whites that don't even like African-Americans. They don't want anything to do with them. But they'll say that, and the next breath, they'll turn on Kevin Gates or Tupac on the radio. And I'm like, how can you listen to them if you don't want to live next to them? How can you listen to them all day long? And they will admit to you that it doesn't make sense, or they'll say, oh, that's just music. And they just act like you didn't just point on double standard. It's very strange, very bizarre.
Yes, that's more complex than I would describe it.
There's a lot of social factors that factor in. I mean, from like it would probably take 3 hours, from my opinion, to literally point out every angle that we're under attack and why we've been put. Are men or women? Because they're two different creatures. We're the same, but we're two different creatures. And so they've been attacked in different ways than the men have. And the men have been attacked in different ways than the women have. And so there's like this whole dynamic going on. And it's war on all fronts. It's from what you see. Like, you know, I was having a conversation with them today. I like to dress very nice. And I think like that is imperative as a white nationalist. You are basically declaring to the world that you're not like the others. And so the world is so materialistic around us. They don't have any spirit. They don't have a spiritual plane to them. It's all mental and emotional and physical, what they see. So it's how much money you have or how you dress. And so that's how they're going to judge you first and foremost. So you might be the most wholesome person, but you look abrasive or you look like someone they don't want to listen to, and you'll never get in. Which, more traditionally, we were taught, hey, don't judge a book by its cover, you know, but that just isn't true in today's world. It's hyper-materialized. Look, go to any gas station and look out front at the ads, the advertisement, all the bright imagery, all the, you know, bold lettering, all the ads, all those things are designed to catch your eye and keep you locked in. We see that on television, at Walmart. We see that everywhere we go, we're seeing this sort of flashy imagery. What it doesn't just not apply to other individuals. We're looking for that in other individuals as well, how they dress. It all comes with being a hyper-capitalized society.
That's a great, although it's kind of complex, but I do follow exactly everything you're saying. It is a complex answer, a complex solution to a complex question. And I'm trying to figure out which way to go from here.
I wish I could just be like, well, you know, guys, if we just fix this, it'd be okay. But it's like there is so much. I really think that a lot of time should be dedicated in the men, though. Like the simping needs to stop. Everyone, stop simping. This is your public service announcement. Stop simping. Especially you so-called white nationalists in the movement. Stop simping. It's disgusting.
Well, before we go, we got to go to our last break in a minute. But when we come back, I'd like to briefly touch about, because I know our listening family would love to hear about the heart of this interview tonight. It was what happened to you, because you were a hero in Charlottesville, and maybe give 2-3 minutes on that. And then we always talk about solutions on Blood River Radio. At the end of the show, we'll talk about solutions, and we'll try to work your mother in just a minute. But we can have you on anytime if you want to come. And so I know we can get Tamara on. In fact, we've had Tamara on your mother many times before in the past. But before we go to, we've got just a few seconds. What are some of the, start on some of the solutions to get our people back? And you mentioned specifically young women, and I agree with you. If they can, if the young women, white women can be captured and taken away from white men, there will be no more white race. So what are some of the, well, that goes at me thinking about that question, Jacob. And we'll answer when we come back, and then we'll talk a little bit about Charlottesville. Be right back, folks.
Experience the untamed spirit of the American West with Range Magazine. Each issue is a visual journey featuring award-winning photography and compelling stories that capture the heart of ranching and rural life. Stay informed on the challenges and triumphs of those who live and work on the land. Subscribe today and receive quarterly editions delivered to your doorstep, and join a community that cherishes the enduring legacy of the Western frontier. Visit rangemagazine.com to subscribe.
Blood River Radio is the only news media in the United States whose sole purpose of being is to fight against the ever-rising tide of global white genocide, both soft and hard genocide, whether it is in the form of ethnic cleansing via the current massive invasion of non-white, non-Christian hordes that are overwhelming the once all-white nations of Western Europe, the United Kingdom, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, and the United States, or via the hard genocide in South Africa, where the rape, murder, and torture of whites is an ongoing daily occurrence. Though we are a Christian brotherhood, we will cooperate with other groups in our operations if it will shorten our people's casualty list. We further pledge to you to leave the radio studio at every opportunity and take it to our churches, to our universities, and most importantly, we promise to occupy the streets. However, none of our mission can succeed without funding. Please help us all that you can and donate to our cause by going to www.bloodriverradio.com.
This is a battle between truth and deceit, a battle between forces that would enslave this country in darkness and between a media that wants to present you with the truth.
We are being censored. America's news outlets no longer provide the truth. 90% of news outlets in the United States are controlled by 6 corporations. The mission of the Epoch Times is to chase the truth, to ground all statements in fact.
TheEpicTimes.com.
Dear Blood River Radio family, running out of time, so I'm going to go right back. I was asking Jacob before we went to the break. Blood River Radio, we're always trying to be about solutions. Even when it seems hopeless, like there is no solution, we try to say it's never, ever hopeless. You know, so we'd like to try to get some kind of a solution. Jacob, we were talking about how the white people, especially young people, and I guess in my case, young would be, I guess, 50 or less. While they've been beaten over the head, white people, white men have been emasculated and turned into like feminine. A lot of them are just super feminine. They wouldn't know a masculine man. So like depending on it. And the women have been taught to be independent, to hate men. I can show you men. I run a lot, and you see the people, all the women all the time. I'm independent. I don't need no stinking man. I don't need this. I don't need that. So anyway, Jacob, what, if any solutions that you have, because you've been in the belly of the beast in the Virginia State Penitentiary, what are some of the solutions you have that we could try to help white children get back to being white and taking pride in being white?
You had a very good point just a second ago. Since I've been out, it's very strange. I can't tell the difference between the men and the women sometimes. Like earlier today, I saw a man. I thought he was a woman, and the men looked so effeminate. I saw a woman, and I thought she was a man, and then I was like, oh no, that's actually a woman. My bad. You know, just like I don't know what to think. So. But I would like to offer a solution from, you know, my humble opinion. For me, I'm a Balkanist. I believe 100% in Balkanizing. The thing about women, you know, first we have to get our men in line. Our women kind of went their own way, and our men took them at face value. And so I believe that men and women, they respond to culture. So if you go outside, we know all as white nationalists, if we go outside the American norm culture, what happens to us? Well, you take the path that I just went through. You get persecuted, you get sent to prison, you lose your job, you are, you know, hated, you're vilified, you know. But if you, you know, mutilate your genitals, you're a hero, and you get to become Time's Woman of the Year. And so what that is they control the culture. The American culture has been hijacked. And so what I've seen amongst white nationalists, and we call them a culture, but I have to use the word very loosely, because, yes, we have our songs and our memes and our movies and our podcasts and our, you know, t-shirts and everything. But what really makes a culture is community. And I believe wholeheartedly that if we had a strong community, especially women, I've met many white nationalists, and I've met few of them that bore children that were white nationalists. And that always disturbed me. Wow. Because I'm like, well, your parents are white nationalists. How are you not a white nationalist? And, you know, look at Don Black's son. You know, we have that situation time and time and time again. And so how do you do it? Well, it's because, you know, the kid did not grow up in an ethno community. The kid grew up in normie land, and his dad was a closet, you know, and I'm not saying that it's not about Don. I'm just saying most white nationalists. His dad was down in the basement doing a podcast and would go to meetups. And then he was back to his job as the electrician on Monday morning, hiding it. And then the kid went to normie school. And so we're expecting this, and then the kid goes out into the world and he says, well, my dad was a psychopath, because the whole world's telling me one thing, and my dad's the only person I've ever met that said something different besides him and his crazy friends, right? So, and the same thing with women. The reason women behave the way they do is because they've been shamed into it. Shame works. Shame is how the Europeans, we used to tar and feather people and drive them out of town. Whenever France was liberated, the women that were fraternizing with the German soldiers had their heads shaven and swastikas painted on their titties. So that was a shame culture. And they knew not to do those things. That's the way that we kept miscegenation down in the 60s and 70s before, you know, when they integrated the blacks in our communities. And so we have to balkanize. We have to create a counterculture that our kids can be brought up in that is completely detached from this hijacked culture. It is rot. If you think we're going to take this country back, right, then you are delusional. You need to take some paranoid schizophrenia medication, because it's not going to happen. Like, you're not going to get the whole pie back, white man. Sorry. You should have, when the Little Rock 9 happened, you should have got your pie back then, but you didn't do it. And sadly, I wasn't even around that time. And so when our own military stuck bayonets in those mothers' faces, that's when something should have happened. But sadly, it didn't, you know. But so all we can really realistically hope for is get a slice of that pie for us. And right now, I don't see us getting that slice. Right now, I see us getting nothing, not even a crumb. We're sitting outside the pie shop watching foreigners eat the pie. So
that's
what we need to do as white is create even the smallest community will have a great impact. You know, but you have to have community. And it's like people will – I never understood this, because I've been around white nationalists and they'll say, you know, oh, 1488, I'll die for my race. I'll die for my people. I'll do all this. Well, you won't balkanize and move to another area with more white nationalists. Well, you'll die for your race, but why won't you live for it? Why won't you live for your race? Why won't you spend 60 years on this earth? I mean, like you have, Eddie, why won't you just give a long life of activism? Grassroots activism. I'm not asking you to go out in the streets and wave flags and get beat up by Antifa or beat up by the cops. I'm asking you to go and farm and raise your kids right. And you know what? Be around people that sometimes piss you off and you don't want to be around. But you know what? They're white and they have morals. You're the same moral blueprint. So you put your differences aside for the greater good of the future. But no, You'd rather play dress up and go out in the streets and get beat up by Antifa and then end up on Christian Piccolini's Life After Hating 10 years.
You know, go ahead, Jacob.
But so that's my point is we need to create a lasting culture amongst whites. And here's another thing too. It doesn't have to, here's the thing that annoys me too, because I am also true. I practice also true. I believe in the folkish community. I support, you know, Christian Identity, CI. But here's the thing. We don't have to all be united under one banner as long as we're pro-white. And that's what a lot of groups try to do. You have these umbrella groups like TWP, and they say, we're going to have this one big giant party, and every white nationalist is going to join it. Are you telling me you're going to do what the Huns couldn't do, what the Mongols couldn't do, what the Ottomans couldn't do, and unite the entire white race for the first time in its recorded history? Yeah, okay. Good luck with that, because it's never been done. Even when the Huns came, the Germans were still fighting the Romans. They were still fighting the Romans with the Huns on their heels. So now the Romans did let them inside the wall, obviously, but they were still fighting each other. Whites fight each other. That's just what we do. But the thing is we're not going to be one big autonomous, cohesive, because we're hyper-individualist. Study your ancestry. Study your own psychoevolution. We're not psychologically hardwired to do that, which is why we need an ethnostate, because in a multicultural society, we are destroyed. We are at a disadvantage amongst cultures that are collectivist. So what I'm proposing is
let me ask you this.
Find a culture and then work with other cultures that are different but are also pro-white.
Without the ability of being an ethnostate, what would be the second best? I'm thinking about maybe having your kids homes. I mean, if right now I can't see a big ethnostate. But this is
ethnostate. Let's not get carried away. We gotta learn how to build a rocket before we can start colonizing planets, Eddie.
Yes.
We need a ethno community, not an ethno.
Yeah. There you go. There you go. Uh huh.
The man and the woman is a family, and a collection of families makes a tribe. A collection of tribes makes a state. A collection of states makes a nation, and that's what we need. That's national socialism, and so we need first a functioning white family, because that's what the communists destroyed. We got to work first on that.
Yes.
And then we have to have a functioning white community. And that is a Herculean feat. That's a great wall.
Let me ask this. Let me ask this. If the longest, like we've always said, the longest journey starts one step. What is the first step? What is the first step, Jacob? I think I know.
I would say don't be so afraid to, I wouldn't be not to put yourself out there. You know, go out and find someone that you trust and somebody you care about and move to be near them. You know, it's like, you know, oh, I got my good job and I got my house and I got stability. I might have to move up here and move away from someone. So what's up? Do you want freedom or comfort? And most people take comfort. I wasn't born to be comfortable. I wasn't put on this earth to be comfortable, because I know from studying and from my own religious philosophy that comfort will you'll never catch it. You'll chase your tail until the end of time. Eddie, you're how old are you?
I'll be 78 in April, April the 6th.
Are you comfortable when you get up and out of bed in the morning?
No, I'm always hungry. I'm always hungry to go.
How do your joints feel running marathons?
Oh, I'm signed up. I'm scheduled to do the New York Marathon. It'll be the first Sunday in November. And I never get fast enough. My endurance never gets good enough to suit me. I'm always more. I want to do more. I'm one of these guys, I like to mix it up in the streets. I'm guilty of that. I like to get in the streets to raise hell. I know it might not be a productive all the time, but I can release some of my venom toward our enemies. But Jake, we've run completely out of time.
Come on, Eddie. Stop drinking that coffee, man.
I'm a coffee hound now. I love that coffee, bro. Listen, we got to get you back on again very soon, because we only touched the surface. It got more complex than I thought it would be. But listen, we'll be right back. We'll be right back same time, same place next week. It'll be the 15th of February. Jacob, thank you so much for coming on. Tamara, I'll have to get you on by yourself, because you have a very intelligent man right here. But God bless y'all. Thank you for being on. You made my day.
Yes, sir.
Well, thank you so much, everybody. Thank you, Go Radio family. Good night. See you on the 15th.